Ambush Radio.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
Let me introduce. This is Frank Edward Nora of The Overnightscape, theovernightscape.com.
Hey.
Now I'll edit that part out.
Okay.
So you don't like my format of not introducing anyone?
Yeah, I just think it's just sort of orients the listener a little bit if you just sort of introduce sort of who is there and where you are, and just sort of to set the scene so people sort of can create a mental image and they know who the players are and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I am a fan of audio that is contextless, right? Like I had a podcast called Daily Podcast from Another Place that I ran for a few months.
Right.
And that was a daily podcast, and the audio pieces on there were completely out of the blue and just bizarre, and it gave people no frame of reference whatsoever.
Right.
So I definitely see where you're coming from, but I guess I'm just sort of a fan of a little bit more of the traditional idea of, doing a radio show. Like, here is so-and-so, so-and-so, and here we are on this show, and here we go. I guess it depends on what kind of show you're trying to do.
Where it started for me was shows on tape. Me and a friend Ray, we were Alan Ray Hate the Radio. And we just sat down with the tape recorder and the newspaper that day and did a show. This was in upstate New York, up in Syracuse. And, we would do like the national news stories anyway, or if something local was just goofy sounding, we would just rip on it, that type of thing. And then we went on the air for a short while, and people came at it, very aggressively and negatively, and they didn't like it, but in a kind of a Howard Stern's quality. Not that we were making, being mean or obnoxious, but they listened to the whole show because they were interested in how obnoxious and how they didn't understand it. So we actually had dedicated listeners listening to every word we said, just trying to figure out what the heck the show was.
Now, when you were doing it on tape, was it distributed anywhere? Was it going anywhere, or was it just sort of on tape?
Nope, it was only just for us blowing off steam. We would work late at night and after this pizzeria, and we couldn't just go to bed. We were all wired up, so we would get a coffee or a beer or something like that and go sit in front of the mics, and I'd play a piece of music for bumper, and we'd come in and we'd start talking about some news story and just rant and rave back and forth, and then pop out with another song just to catch our breath and figure out what the next story was.
Yeah, because I did a show almost exactly like that back in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Peter, called Train Crap and Blood. And we did it to tape with the idea of perhaps distributing the tapes, but we really never did. We never distributed them very far.
Right.
Interesting, because it was sort of in the spirit of, I guess, podcasting now or internet radio, but back in 91, no one really had the internet.
Right.
It was going to be sort of we called it a broadcast magazine. It was going to be a little cassette that we were theoretically going to distribute. So I guess people like you and me, who sort of have this in our blood of wanting to do shows, you'll do it even if there's no way to do it. There's no way to distribute it.
Right. Well, and I worked in regular commercial radio on the production side for morning talk radio, but it was that hacky morning crew crank call kind of show.
Yeah.
And it can only go just so far. When I got a chance to see, and this is in 94, how messed up commercial radio was, that it was really advertiser and station owner controlled. It wasn't anything to do with the listeners. If they could have figured out a way to continue to make money without anybody listening to it or even having to transmit it because of the cost of the transmitter, they would have done it.
Yeah.
Ambush Radio.
If you really step back and look at radio, right, it started in the 1920s, I believe, was when radio really started.
Right.
And so from the 20s to about the mid-40s, that was the golden age of radio. Really, the 30s and 40s were the golden age of radio, and they just started to explore what was possible with this audio medium.
Right.
With audio that was not live, you're not sitting in a room and someone's talking, it was something that could be distributed. It was disembodied. And then around, literally, it was like the 1946, 47, 48, the whole TV thing started. And by 1950, everyone jumped ship from radio to television. So this incredible medium was abandoned pretty much.
Well, and wrongly, too, because I don't understand why they ran so quickly to television. Seeing how as with radio, because I grew up listening to a lot of old-time radio. The public radio station up in Oswego was really great. They're kind of the warehouse of a lot of old-time radio, and they put it out to all the different other public radio stations. The old-time radio did have that theater of the mind, paint the picture, and all you had to do was get your main actors of the day to just stand there with their script and read. Then you go to television and you got to throw away the script. Everybody's got to memorize, ad lib, be able to work well on camera, do something interesting because you're being looked at. And nobody was ready for it. And that's why you see like a lot of the first programs were just kind of standing around, you know, variety shows. Here we are in front of the camera.
Yeah. And the thing is, if you think about it, the radio stations then starting in the early 1950s, were faced with having to figure out a way to survive without going out of business, basically. I mean, having a radio station cost a lot of money.
Right.
The transmitter and all the equipment, especially back then. And they needed, so they adapted. And that, I think, started us down the road to where we are now with commercial radio, which is really limited types of content, which are focused on making money because, really, they needed a way to survive.
Right. They've been basically catching up since the 40s.
Yeah. I don't think commercial radio has ever really recovered. And if you think about it, there's a couple different kinds of audio entertainment, you may say. There's music, which is something that's designed to be listened to over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And recorded media like records and the old 78 RPMs and then cassettes and CDs are good for distributing stuff that is meant to be listened to over and over again. But ephemeral audio, stuff that you may not want to hear more than once, there was no way to distribute it to people other than through radio for such a long time.
Right.
And that's why, now, finally, there's just the internet has matured to the point where you can easily distribute audio, huge amounts of audio, almost unlimited amounts of audio to people now. And people are just catching on that now, as a society, we could start to continue exploring what this really wonderful medium has to offer.
Well, and the vastness of content, that may be where radio was so short-sighted. They only went after a couple of unique things that seemed to sell advertising, and if they had kept pushing the boundaries and exploring new and better audio, radio might have overpowered television somewhere there in the 70s.
It could have, but who would have had the guts to do that when... Like I said, for a long time, they really were trying to figure out how to survive and went to music and went to news and political talk as ways to really to pay the bills so they didn't go out of business.
Well, and actually a lot of them, they couldn't afford, some of them couldn't afford to go up to FM and a full stereo signal, so they stayed on AM. Well, and they were trying to play music, because that was the time. And then everybody said, why do I want to listen to music on AM? Okay, well, we'll put somebody talking on there. Okay, now he's talking. Talking doesn't matter because, it's not going to sound that much better in stereo anyway. And that's where that whole talk radio format comes out of, is AM living, past its due date.
Yeah, and that's why I think that, we're just starting now with podcasting is sort of changed everyone's mind about this whole thing. Because as you know, I've sort of been trying to push for file-based distribution of shows for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my voice wasn't very strong out there. My websites weren't really didn't have a lot of people going to them. And once Adam Curry came along with his software where you could automatically do this, that really started to change the way people thought. It finally dawned on them, I could use my iPod and listen to like talk shows too, not just music.
Right. Yeah. I can't. What's the point in getting an iPod? Because I don't want to pay for all that downloaded music. You can't download for free anymore. Blah blah blah. Well, there's of, you know, hours and hours of original content, you know, every week on the internet. Go out there and find that.
I was trying to push this idea, and as you know, I think I emailed you and contacted you about, right, the MP3s. It was you. I contacted you, right? Way back.
Yeah, it was late 2003. Well, we started chatting about this stuff,
and I guess it was just a matter of time before these two ideas intersected. But for a while, people were very much, and there's still a lot of people out there who do internet radio that are really focused on streaming, and they're still focused on streaming. And I just think it's pretty much the wrong way to go if you're exclusively streaming,
right?
And people are still persisting even with all of the hype around podcasting right now.
Well, and yeah, and that was your exact point to me was, well, why don't you throw up the MP3s as well, or a link to them so that people can download them? And at first, I was using the Flash file embedded audio to save space because the file would be compressed a little more inside of Flash,
yeah.
And it wouldn't be readily downloadable. You'd have to go to the site to listen to it. I was kind of forcing my listeners to you know, to go directly to the URL and check it out instead of, you know, just pulling it out of the ether like podcasting is.
Yeah.
And you're right that kind of cuts down. You're only going to get more of the diehards that are willing to go and listen that way. You're not going to get just the everyday population. In 2000 was when Live 365 came online, right?
Yeah, and I was definitely into doing that as well. I was back in, was it March? Yeah, March of 2000, I started my shows on Live 365.
Were you putting up recording and producing a channel, or were you doing live shows?
I was putting up recordings at that point. That was the very beginning of my, I had a website called Bluffcosm. That was my first internet radio thing. And some of that, I told you about that older show I did in 1991. That was the first thing I put up there. Uh-huh. I had all these tapes I had done. No one had ever heard them, so I figured throw them on Live 365, and some people started hearing it.
Right.
Sort of the start of this type of stuff, because back then it was kind of difficult to get your audio out there. The websites back then gave you like 20 megabytes of space or something for hosting.
Right.
So that was, it's amazing to think that if just 2000 was the dark ages, like 5 years ago, was just the really early beginnings of this type of stuff.
Well, all of this technology is definitely exponential. It just speeds up, you know, every year it's a leap and bound from last year. Live 365, I'm looking for the same kind of cyclical thing to happen with podcasting. In the beginning, Live 365 offered it completely free to listen, to broadcast, and tons of people went out there and did it, you know, either just getting their MP3s and putting them up, or producing, you know, a little bit of audio and putting it up, or doing live shows. But then a little bit after time, it started to die out where the hobbyists, you know, they had to get back to work and do other things, and they didn't have the time. And then eventually when the pay stuff came in, you know, certain people didn't want to pay to broadcast, certain people didn't want to pay to listen, and that whole thing started to die down. You know, do we see the same potential happening to podcasting?
Well, that's very interesting, because as you know, it was about a year ago that on newtimeradio.com, I specifically started saying my site is focused on MP3 based shows. I'm going to try, you know, that's going to be my focus. I really believe in this idea. I really think that this is the wave of the future. And for a while, there was so little interest in this subject. You know, they say, be careful what you wish for. With Adam Curry and his iPod and all this, he opened the floodgates. And so my site and my podcast started to get flooded. You know, started to get drowning in the sea of other people doing this. So, you know. But I'm glad it happened, though. But it was very interesting. So now, like you said, the thing has started. There's this huge ramp up, and I really wonder if it is going to be cyclical. So I'm not sure. I mean, I would kind of like it if there would be a crest, and then the thing would start to die down. So there would be less podcasts out there. So I would have an easier time promoting my show. It's one of these things where on an iPod, it's so great. You start and stop it whenever you want. You can amass or stockpile as many shows. Then when you have, anytime you have a chance to listen to it, no matter where you are, you just start where you left off and listen, fast forward through the commercials, everything. Well, I'm sure they don't want you to do that. and I think it just goes to show you this point in history right now, it ultimately is going to be the content itself that is going to really matter, right?
Right.
Because I think the whole satellite radio thing is really doomed at some point because of iPods and because of the coming Wi-Fi revolution. I'm just wondering, why do you think they're not offering the shows as MP3s right now?
Well, obviously, they worry about the whole piracy thing. You know, people, one guy downloads it, and then he distributes it to 10 different people. But that's already happening. So
that's already happening.
Right.
I mean, it's happening.
So why not take, you know, the 3% of the people that would go ahead and pay the premium? Now you've got 3% of the money instead of none of the money.
I would absolutely, and not some kind of digital rights managed, you know, Windows Media garbage, regular MP3s like I'm getting now of the shows directly from the source, right?
Yeah.
I would absolutely pay for that. Absolutely. I guess it wouldn't really benefit them that much to just sell one of their shows as MP3s because they're trying to get people to get satellite radio for the overall experience of the music and everything else.
One of the best examples of ambush marketing.
Ambush Radio.
It seems a little strange, but I just can't explain why I'm tearing out a page and then I'm sending it out over the ocean. And I've been feeling down lately ever since I met you, baby. People say I'm acting crazy. They say that I'm
Radio.
I haven't used Mac now for several years since I left the print industry. Why does, I mean, podcasting caught on as a terminology for the genre, but why do they get free advertising every time we mention our genre?
Because I think the iPod is the device which created mass acceptance and mass usage of a portable audio player. No one else really captured that. And I do think that iTunes and iPod are excellent things. And iTunes is a great program. You can use it on Windows as well.
Do they deserve the moniker, though?
I think so. I have my problems with Apple as a computer, but I think iTunes has always been a great program. It started off as this program, SoundJam, on the Mac, and it's still very open. You can play MP3s. You can convert all types of file formats into each other. You can rip CDs into any format you want, and it's still really open. And they just added onto it a music store, which where you can buy files. But beyond that, it's very open and it's very very useful tool for all sorts of conversion. So,
well, like you were saying, with you know, podcasting as a term, it could easily be, you know, what started as podcasting is now, you know, New Time Radio. You know what I'm saying? And in fact, I've had the same exact delusions of grandeur because I really do believe in it as almost an activist movement of, you know, beating up a bit on commercial radio so that they get the hint and they start to adapt, you know, their way of programming and their way of advertising. And for people to realize that there, if you don't like something, but you like it at the same time, I like radio, but I don't like what's happened to radio, you know, don't just stop there and go, well, but I got to take what they give me because, you know, I'm a sheep. You know, you go out and create your own, make your own radio.
Yeah, and now the tools are there to do it. And, I mean, as far as the term goes, the podcasting, it's just when these things catch on, it's a lot of different factors. It's the way the word sounds. It's the times, the technology of the times. And so podcasting is the term now, and that is what's caught on. But I would say I think that there's going to be a next step in all of this, and I think the word podcasting will get supplanted eventually by another word. And this is an idea I've had for a long time. In fact, I was very surprised. I looked at my very first website about internet radio.
Right.
I've forgotten that I wrote. This was back in, March of 2000. I wrote, listen to my internet radio station on your portable MP3 player. And I had actually written that. I had forgotten that I wrote that. And then after that, I wrote one more sentence, which said, a full audio interface someday. And to me, I think this is going to be the next step for this type of stuff, which is a full interface that's audio. And if you can imagine a portable device like an iPod, connected to the internet through Wi-Fi connections, through an interface that's either spoken or using simple buttons or something, you can, the player can be smart. So you can be listening to something, and the show, they may mention another show. You can say, you could just talk to your player, say something like, stop this for now, let me hear some of that other show for a while, then we'll go back to this one. And it would be able to, you know, through an interactive programming, do that, execute that. You could say, you could ask your player, you know, of the shows that I like, what are some ones that have released new episodes in the past 12 hours? And it would talk to you and tell you,
right,
this show, and, well, let me listen to this one. That, I think, is going to be the next step. So it's really not going to be podcasting anymore. It's going to be a very seamless experience where you fire up your device, and it'll either start playing something that it knows you want, or you just talk to it, and it will tell you what's available. You might say, let me hear the latest review show of what are some new things out there. You hear little clips. Add that one to my list. Let me hear show 4 of this show. And that technology is completely within a few years of being available. And I think that is going to be the next stage.
So you're saying the revolution will be on demand?
It will be completely on demand, and it will be, I think, a seamless. It will not even be where you have to set up feeds and transferring them to your device and then picking up. I mean, right now it's pretty easy, but I think the next step is going to be very interactive, even to the point that you could create, you've already started doing this, somewhat interactive shows where you have shows that start and then parts get added to it.
Right.
You could have audio games or audio environments. You could have a whole audio world.
Well, and originally, like I was saying, with the Flash files, I had the ability to, while it's playing along through the file and we mention some website, you know, cafepress.com, pop, I could actually put that command in the, you know, in the play line, and it would immediately pop up that window to say Cafe Press, not necessarily as an advertisement. You know, we could suddenly say, yeah, did you see Prince Charles lately? Pop, there's a picture of Prince Charles, you know, and what I'm talking about. It looks like a goob or something like that. You know, not so much as an advertising pop-up, but just a, hey, this is what we're talking about. Now you have the visual as well, or now you have the link to the actual article. You know, go read the full article instead of us explaining it all to you or reading it to you. You know, you can see it yourself.
Yeah, but underneath all this is still going to be the content itself, the shows themselves. And that, to me, that's the key. So that's why I'm focusing on trying to make my show the best it can be. And I'm not, you know, I don't view it as just a podcast. I view it as something that it's just a show, an audio show. And I am looking forward to those next levels, which I think are going to be very exciting. I think this is just the start of this type of stuff.
Unless there's some kind of huge crash to it, or something better comes along to replace it.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I think that it's been established that there's people love audio shows. I know I do. I love all kinds of audio shows. And I think the medium itself is much more compelling. Someone talking is so much more compelling than perhaps someone writing something on a blog.
Well, really, the copyright nuts and Nazis have created this this genre of talk as a thing to go to, because it's the only thing you can create original easy enough. You don't have to sit down with a guitar and write a song this way. You can just open up the mic and talk. You've got original content.
Yeah, and I would love to be able to be into independent bands and independent music. I just can't do it. I realize the music I listen to is predominantly from record labels that are part of the RIAA. I can't help it.
And dealing with, doing sound for bands for years and recording studio, you don't want to, even the independents, even the unsigns, still have all these delusions of grandeur and they think they're the next thing to get signed. And even if they're saying, oh yeah, we want to get airplay, you know, play us here, play us there. And then suddenly they change their mind, or the band breaks up, I've got cases full of bands that don't exist anymore, or they won't speak to one another. And it's great music. I always kind of wonder whether that's legal to throw on, because, you know, even if it's under a record label or a record group, it's not like they can get much out of it anymore. They can't even sell it anymore.
Well, it's probably illegal, and that's why I don't play any music on my show that's copyrighted. And people even write me, independent artists write me occasionally. I guess they're writing a lot of podcasters to play their stuff on my show, and I won't do it, because that means I'm going to lose flexibility with what I can do with my stuff in the future.
Yeah, that's what I find, too. Unless you've got a... you're allowed to play this track off this album in perpetuity contract, then, you know, you want to be able to offer it forever. And if suddenly now it's the next Britney Spears and selling, and you're getting told, oh, you got to take that off. Yeah. Now you got to go back and either rip a show to pieces to take it off, or just, you know, throw that show in the can.
Yeah. In fact, there's a little article in Entertainment Weekly recently about old TV shows. They mentioned Beverly Hills 90210 and WKRP in Cincinnati. They can't release these shows to DVD because of the music licensing.
Ugh.
These shows are in limbo. They're stuck because it would be prohibitively expensive to license the music. They wouldn't make any money on the DVDs, so people cannot get these shows on DVD now because of the music licensing. I think that's so ridiculous. So one of these shows, I think it was Felicity, they redid the soundtrack of all the shows, remixing in copyright-free music or music they had copyright rights to.
Right.
That, to me, is that really the spirit of music?
No, that sounds more like the BBC now. Yeah, we created the show, but we don't want anybody to have it. You can't readily buy The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy or Doctor Who for a million years just because some guy, you know, is sitting on it in his office and won't let it out.
Well, again, with all that stuff, people create their own distribution networks, and so you can get it that way. And it's just weird, because if they released it, people would buy it. No one's really against giving money to people. It's just when it's so, like, the digital rights management is so inconvenient and so unreasonable. So I think there is a lot of potential there. I wish I had the resources to create this interface, to create this next level but I just don't have the resources.
So do you have the words material is copywritten on your website?
Well, I mean, the thing about copyright is they've been changing the laws a lot, but anything that you create that's an original creation, at the moment it's completed, it is copyrighted.
Correct.
There's no longer any registration required, and I, on my site, I simply say copyright Frank Edward Nora. And I've been looking at the Creative Commons licenses for a long, long time, and I really wanted to put my shows under those licenses, and I think I will eventually. It's just, we're living in a world of such draconian laws that even those Creative Commons licenses are sub-licenses to this really terrible world of laws that makes it very difficult to do anything. And, for example, I invoke fair use on my show. If I review an album by an artist, I'll play clips of songs under fair use, because in the context of a review, you're allowed to play clips of the song in the context of your review, right? That makes sense.
Right.
That is the law. It's commonly understood to be the law. Now, if I go and say, I'm a nice guy, I'm going to release my shows into the public domain, right?
Right.
Then someone could say, okay, it's in the public domain, so let me take this sample of this Beck song and make my own song out of it because it's public domain.
Right.
Getting into a lot of problems.
Yes.
And I've even found some on archive.org. There's all of these old ephemeral films, old educational films and things that are in the public domain. And there's music on there. And I'm really wondering, I know some of that music is on some CDs I have that are copyrighted. Can I use the clips of those songs from the public domain stuff or not? And you really can't.
Yeah.
If there's the person who owns the copyright to that song could come back and sue you, even if someone said, hey, it's public domain. And the guy that said it was public domain could get sued too.
Right.
So that's why I really feel like, hey, here's my file. They're MP3s. Download them, and they're copyrighted. And I, at this point, I guess I'm keeping it kind of vague. I guess something like Creative Commons is the right way to go, where you write a specific license which says you may download this under these conditions and this and that. And
well, I mean, you personally, though, with your content, how far do you see yourself now or even in the future? How far would you go to chase that down, or would you allow it to go, hey, they got it, you know, good for them?
I don't really concern myself with that too much, and I have seen a lot, I think you touched on it, a lot of people who are aspiring creators in different fields get obsessed with copyright and obsessed with thoughts that people are going to steal their stuff, which is usually not going to happen.
Ambush Radio.
Yeah, I'm just doing this little show. I'm recording in my house and people are listening to it. Like, do I have to have, you know, all this legalistic, this and that? And I guess you should. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's true. You never know what's going to take off with the public, you know, what they're suddenly going to find, you know, worth paying a dollar for.
Yeah. Well, I think there's going to be a big crackdown by the RIAA on podcasting, because there's a lot of use of copyrighted, RIAA copyrighted songs on podcasts. To me, it's a minor inconvenience that I, you know, I can talk about the world, I can talk about my life, I can talk about pop culture, and I can play a song, a clip of a song if I'm reviewing it, but if I really like a song and I want to play the whole thing, I just can't. And that's just one limitation that I have to deal with for my show, and it's really not that bad of a limitation. I wish I could just say, hey, here's a song I like, listen to it occasionally, but you can't do it legally. A lot of podcasters are doing it, but it's down the road, their archives could be that they'll get a letter which will say, take your archives offline immediately or else we'll take legal action. And even if their show is talk, like a talk show, like your show or my show, with music interspersed, it'll be illegal for them to let people hear their shows anymore unless they went in and edited everything out.
Well, see, that's right now the music I use on my show is under Creative Commons license. So the potential is that if I do figure out some way of making money with the show someday, that I would get that letter saying, you know, well, you got to pull all that music off or take all your archives down because, you know, you're now making money through our music.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's, but you know, that's the, that is the, the music industry. They turned music, which is supposed to be a creative, joyous thing, into an industry and locked all the stuff down. But
and those would be, yeah, those really are the people that supposedly say, you know, let's have this free world. Let me get my voice out. You know, let's all think happy thoughts because of the music. And then they say, no, none of you can have it.
Yeah. And meanwhile, just like everything else we've been talking about, the Opie and Anthony show or episodes of Doctor Who, obviously all the music that's locked down is slipping through their fingers faster and faster all the time.
And so almost creating kind of a mafia effect, you know, of prohibition of alcohol type of thing. Prohibit the music, and the underground CD networks will find a way to get it to the mass public.
Ultimately, it's got to be something like you just pay a music fee, like $20 a month, and you can just listen to any music that's ever been recorded ever. I think that that's probably how it's going to go, right?
Well, it all becomes a major socialist movement where there's going to be the government fund. You know, everybody has to pay part of their income taxes goes to the federal music rights and whatever fund. And then musicians, after they release a song, they can, you know, claim, you know, some money off their taxes, or they can claim some money out of the fund, you know, because of the fact that they released a piece of music.
Yeah, that's another thing. Or, that, like you said about the utopian stuff, I mean, Creative Commons and Archive.org is looking at a utopian future where more and more artists decide to license their music in more flexible ways, and maybe people, as time goes on, can start to like those bands instead of commercial bands. And
they've got to know that if somebody hears a song, you know, there's like a lot of like older music now, the 80s music, even earlier than the 80s. If you hear that one song out of the blue because somebody, you know, stuck it in a podcast or you just ran across it on the internet somewhere and you suddenly go, wow, that band Winger, they were great. You know, where's their CD? I got to get a hold of that. They always assume that because people can download this one MP3, that's the end of it. They will never, ever buy another album by this band. They will download every piece of music they can get.
Well, speak for yourself.
Oh, you've actually gone over to that, huh? You will never buy another album?
Well, you know, when you walk into a store and an album is $20, or actually in New York City, you go to buy a new CD that's not on sale. It does cost like $21 or $20.95.
I wanted the new Bare Naked Ladies. I went straight to their website and I bought it right off the website. It was like $13 and a couple dollars shipping or so, you know, so it was even cheaper than $20 in the end. And it came straight from them or straight from the record company anyways. And I assume, you know, that money is directly going to the band that way. So bands need to make their stuff, even at a price, readily accessible.
I do wish sometimes that some of the stuff I have, I wish I could just go to a site and just give them money for, like, I really like your album, I'll give you some money for it, I already have it, just, you know.
Yeah, well, they might be giants. I did the same thing. They had, you know, download service. You pay, you know, $9.99, and you can download all the songs, you know, at a full file. They aren't a timed file where they're going to die off or anything like that. That you could just download the whole album, and, you know, with a high-speed connection, in 10 minutes, I had the whole new album for $9.99.
Yeah, I mean, something like that, it's a little bit more where there's a convenience factor, and it's not so, $10 is way too much for an album. I don't know where this is coming from, but, you know, just that whole thing, I mean.
It's coming from the RIAA, it's coming from ASCAP, it's coming from all these people with their hand in the pot that didn't have anything to do with creating the music in the first place.
I mean, if you could buy an album on iTunes Music Store for, like, 99 cents instead of a song for 99 cents, I'd probably be using it. You know, it's just this 99 cents a song is kind of steep. I mean, there's a certain level. If they lower the price to a certain level, no one's going to even bother to get things through, you know, quote unquote illegal channels.
Right. And that's my sheer point too. If the money seemed correct, you know, if it was 25 cents a song, people would be buying songs every day, every moment their modem was connected to the internet. And the record company, and therefore the producers of the music, would be seeing, you know, monetary compensation regularly in more volume than they had before when they tried to get too much for one little thing.
But apparently the royalty agreements are in place and they're legally binding contracts, and I guess there's every song that's sold they got to pay out to all the different parties these royalties, and they said that 99 cents is pretty much the lowest they can go. Notice, what was it? Walmart was doing it for, was 89 cents or 79 cents.
Yeah.
You really can't go any lower and still pay these, because these contracts were built during a different technology, but the contracts are still valid.
Right. And so therefore, that's what we don't need to be looking at how technology is stealing money from them. We need to find out how they've been stealing money from us all along.
Well, I said, I don't know how do you get around it? How do you say, hey, I have this rock solid contract with you that I'm going to pay you, 15 cents for every copy of this song that we sell. But you know what? The technology changed. I only want to pay you 1 cent, okay?
Yeah.
People are going to say, no, I still want my 15 cents.
Right.
I think they've locked themselves into this thing.
Well, it's all in how you go to them. You need to say, look, I can give you 15 cents or I can give you $30. Which do you want? Well, I want the $30. Great. Well, that means 1 cent per song, but we'll actually get some downloads now.
But I guess that would entail renegotiating contracts with hundreds and thousands of entities.
You're right. We should throw out all the music ever created and start again.
Or else just, I guess the country of Brazil was working on passing legislation to make all of its body of work available online for free. Every song ever created, every album, everything recorded by Brazilian artists.
Just by, like, completely dropping all their regulation laws and everything?
Passing a law, I guess. And apparently the music industry just came down on them, and that didn't go very far.
Well, isn't that a scary thought?
They're saying these are our cultural treasures. We want our people in our country and our children and our children's children to have access to all of these cultural treasures that have been created in the past 100 years. And it should be on a free online library system, let's say. And the music industry just rejected it, and lawsuits and international this and that. And
The public of America gets upset every time they think that the oil industry is running the government and is causing us to go to war here and there. But they don't think anything about the fact that the record industry has stopped them from listening to what they want, buying what they want, driving in the car, listening to the radio station the way they want. They don't think anything of the fact that they have changed legislation or have bent arms in Congress over the years to get what they want out of it. There doesn't seem to be any kind of revolution, any kind of revolt against the recording industry.
Well, I guess it's an entrenched thing, and of course they're involved with the government, and I guess that's why movements like Creative Commons are saying, well, under the law, if you create a song and it's your original creation, you can apply any license you want to the copyright. So it is, like I said, this sort of idea of starting over with a new world of music, which is perhaps not workable, but that at least is an ideal to...
Well, maybe bands like They Might Be Giants offering, pay us direct and download the music. Maybe they are finding a way, to kind of reinvent the way they get out to the public.
Or maybe, as I've talked about in the past, we're entering a time where creative people need a day job, and they do their creative stuff because they love it, but they really don't make much money off it, and that's the way things are going to be.
Right. The first band, the first Pearl Jam that says, hey, we're releasing this album for free, just stop by the local record store and pick it up. And then, if you feel like it, come to our website and hit the PayPal link and give us a donation of $2 or $10 or whatever, The first band that does it, they'll probably make a mint off of it.
Yeah, I love doing my show. I love doing what I'm doing. I'd like to be able to not have to have a day job, but maybe, because if you think about it, probably 99% of people that are creative do work that way. They do have a day job, and they don't make any money off their creative stuff, but they get a lot of satisfaction out of it, and they share it with a few people, and they like it too, and maybe that's what the future is going to be. It's kind of stuck for creative people, but maybe that's the future.
You may not have realized it, but while you were listening to this show, you were time traveling. The audio you just heard was recorded over 4 years ago, in January of 2005. You may have felt the conversation was not quite up to date, but I think our predictions for the future are very interesting, considering that we are now living in that future.
Ambush Radio.